Welcome, welcome. Ooh, quite a few people. Nice to see you all. Do we have Zwelihle? Welcome, Zwelihle. Nice to have you there at the back. Do we have Sierbrak? Hello, Sierbrak. Welcome, welcome. Swellendam? Hello, Swellendam. Welcome. And anyone from here, from Amanis? I don't see anyone from Amanis. How strange. Okay, well, welcome, everyone. So you should have a headset on you if you'd like a translation. Just to note, if you want translation into Afrikaans, that's for channel 1. And if you want translation for either English or Xhosa, that's on channel 2. Unfortunately, these aren't our headphones, so if you can please leave them. We're busy borrowing them from the department. They're not very nice anyway. But you didn't hear me say that. Then, just to jump into the thick of things, I want to also just say we want to have a very smooth proceeding today, but we will unfortunately have load shedding at 6 o'clock. So what we're going to try and do is just move through the presentation quite smoothly. Once we get through the presentation, there'll be a minute or two where we don't have electricity, and then the inverter will kick in, so then we'll be able to continue with translations and continue with presentations for today. So that shouldn't affect us too much. I'm now going to give everyone from my side, an opportunity to introduce themselves. I'm not sure if I said it already. I'm Kayla Murray. I'm the Standing Committee Chair. And I'll start off at the back over there with my colleague, Mr. Seleko, who's looking around very confused. Welcome, Mr. Seleko.
Goeiemiddag. Good afternoon. Medagane. My name is Isaac Mbulelo Seleko. I am from this area, Overberg. And I'm a member of the committee. Thank you very much.
Goeiemiddag, good afternoon everybody. My name is Khalil Brinkhuis. Ik is van die Strand area. Ik is ook een lid van die financiële committee van die Weskaapse parlement. Dank u. Bye, salam alaikum. Bye.
Goeiemiddag, good afternoon. Moweni. Andrikus van der Westhuizen, a member of this committee, but also privileged to be chairing the Standing Committee on Agriculture, Environmental Affairs and Development Planning in the Provincial Parliament. Nice seeing you all.
Goedemorgen, goedemiddag, good afternoon, Molweni, bonjour, Dustin Davids, Procedural Officer, thank you.
Thank you, Dustin. I'd like to hand over to Mr. Klaas, who's sitting there on the opposite side, and to introduce himself as well.
Good afternoon, goeiemiddag, Molweni. My name is Klaas Makaba from the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition in Pretoria. Thank you.
Thank you, and a warm welcome to Mr. Klaas's colleagues who are sitting here and have joined us from DTIC as well. And, of course, a warm welcome again to everybody who's joined us today. We appreciate you taking the time out of your day to join us, and your evening even to join us, as well as to those who will be presenting today. Thank you very much. So we're here to talk about the Copyright and Performance Protection Bill. Before we jump into that, I just want to note that we haven't received any apologies for today. So the way that we'll go about today's proceedings is I will shortly hand over to Mr. Klaas. Mr. Klaas will give his presentation. There'll be an opportunity for any questions of clarity that you might have. You can, of course, make your question of clarity in your preferred language, and we can have that translated so that you can receive and also speak in your home tongue. Then from there, we will move on to oral submissions. Those are the presentations. And that will bring us to a close. So I'm not going to delay us any further. I will now hand over to DTIC. Thank you, Mr. Klaas.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members. We are very excited today to be presenting at Hermanus. As you may know, there is quite a number of public hearings that are happening right through the country, so a lot of provinces where this actually taking place. You'll know that the presentation is too long, but what we'll do is essentially to really focus on the key provisions in the presentation. Copyright is a very complex type of legislation, so it's been a learning curve for government stakeholders as well as the industry. But you'll see that as I go through the presentation, there would be quite a similarities of provisions in both the Copyright Amendment Act as well as the Performance Protection. So some of the provisions are very similar, so we're not going to be repeating those as we go through the presentation. Now, just to give a brief outline of the presentation, we're going to cover the purpose, the background, the objectives of the two bills. We're also going to be talking about the treaties, reservations by the President that were raised in terms of some of the provisions in the amendment bills. We're going to then go through the provisions of the bills. We're going to do the conclusion, and then from there we can then have a discussion or if there are other comments or inputs that you want to actually pose. Now, like I said, the reason for this hearing is to just brief you regarding the two bills. Like I said, there are a number of hearings happening through the country, and then secondly is you'll see that some of the bills will also try to address some of the clauses beyond what the President has actually had reservations on. Now, just in terms of the background of the two bills, the Performance Protection and the Copyright are the old order legislation promulgated around 1967 and 1978 respectively. There was a concern that was actually raised sometimes around 1998 in terms of the artist, you know, dying without having nothing, and that really prompted the establishment of the Music Industry Task Team. Now, sometimes around 2002, Parliament had then passed some of the amendments to the copyright, reintroducing middle time. Then around 2006, my department, the DTIC, then enacted the regulations to specifically deal or regulate collecting societies. There were really quite a number of engagements that actually took place. There was a presidential meeting that took place sometimes around 2009 between the industry as well as the department. Then the Copyright Review Commission, which is responsible to look into the reform or the review of copyright, was then established in 2010 to assess the concerns, especially around, you know, collecting societies, the royalties that were due to musicians and composers as well. Now, during 2010 to 2012, we then commissioned a study through WIPO to do a research on the benefits accruing to the industry, basically on copyright for this particular country. There were a number of campaigns that were actually taking place then, the anti-piracy, and that was actually taking place through the provinces 2010 and 2014. And there was then a formation of the project for the industry, which was launched sometimes around 2012, and that was supported by the DTI as well. 2013, we then published a draft national policy to get comments to the broader stakeholders in terms of the amendments proposed to the copyright. Around 2014, we then commissioned a regulatory impact assessment of the policy that also included the treaties that I'm going to be addressing later on. 2017, then the bills, the performance protection as well as the copyright were then introduced into Parliament. And then in 2018, a subcommittee was then formed. We then encouraged that the provisions or the contents of the treaties be prioritized. The 5th of December 2018, the National Assembly then passed the two bills, and 2019 they were then adopted by the provinces, and sometimes around 2020 they were then referred to the President. That is just really a summary in quick in terms of where we are or what happened with both the copyright as well as the performance protection. Now, I'm going to quickly also address some of the reservations that were actually raised by the President. There were six all in all. The first one related to the incorrect tagging. There was a request that the bill should also be discussed provincially. That's why we are here today. You know, initially they were actually tagged or classified as you know, Section 75 bills, but then you know, there was then a need that, you know, provinces should also be included as well. So that was the first one. The second one related to the retrospectivity of some of the provisions that were contained in the bills, especially Section 6A7, 7A7, 8A5. Because of that, the provisions were then removed from the bills. Thirdly, there were certain delegations that were given to the ministers. So it was actually decided that the provisions which then delegated the minister should actually be removed, because what happened was they were actually giving number of a substantial discretionary powers which it was felt that those can actually be abused. So as a result, those particular provisions were then removed from the bills. Now, the concept of fair use we are going to be discussing broadly is really one of the key provisions that is actually contained in the bill, the fair use provision, one of the new key amendments to the bill. So we are going to be discussing that. The president also raised concern regarding the fair use principle, and also there were some of the copyright exceptions that perhaps were not really included broadly in the bill. So the president felt that we need to actually go further and then look into the other exceptions that need to be included in the bills. And there was also the reservation that he actually raised with regard to the treaty, the implications of the international treaties. So all these six elements, all these six issues, resulted in the process to consult and finalize, especially on the copyright, to actually go further. So the versions that we are going to be discussing now is inclusive of some of the concerns that were raised as a result of the exceptions that were raised by the president. In summary, background moving forward, is that sometimes around between 2021 and 2022, there were consultations in terms of the commencement to the two bills. We call them remitted bills. So there was a first process which was then extended, and there was another further process that happened between the 3rd of December 2021 until the 21st of January 2022. That was actually the second process to receive further comments on the bills. Now, after they've actually been adopted by the National Assembly on the 1st of September, like I said, they were then referred to the National Council of Provinces for concurrence. And then from there, the Select Committee on Trade and Industry, Economic Development, Small Business Development were also briefed regarding the two bills. And that briefing took place on the 25th of October 2022. Then sometimes around the 1st to the 4th of November last year, we then began to do the provincial hearings in the provinces. That is why we are also here today in Hermanus, to actually brief you regarding the two bills. First of all, I'm going to start with the Copyright Amendment Bill, which is one of the complex legislation, ladies and gentlemen. So like I said, it's been a learning curve for government as well in terms of some of the issues that were raised by stakeholders in this. So the main purpose of this, or the objective of this, is to broadly provide a legal framework, and the framework should also, amongst other things, include flexibilities as well as advancement in the judicial space, so that, you know, all the citizens or all the different stakeholders within the copyright are actually involved, are actually included, And then amongst other things that have been introduced or further strengthened was to deal with matters in terms of the management of what we call collecting societies. There are provisions in the bills that address that, but also to further protect the work and the rights of authors in the digital environment. Amongst other things, what the bills try to do is to introduce some standard contractual terms, because one of the issues that was discovered was that there were problems with the agreements or the contracts that, for example, the artists were actually signing. So it was then incumbent upon government to actually try to actually strengthen some of these particular provisions. Right. It also seeks to actually introduce what is called a resale royalty right, which is basically a right that an artist can actually is entitled to. In terms of royalty, when their original work has been resold commercially. We've already spoken about the fair use principle, which is actually introduced in our legal system, and also the objective of the bill is to deal with limitations in terms of access of information, especially for your educational facilities, your library, archives, and museum, and to also broadly address royalties for the artist, and also, amongst other things, to strengthen the functions of the Copyright Tribunal, which is actually an agency that has been established to implement the legislation together with the companies and Intellectual Property Commission. And one of the things that the bill tries to do is to introduce some of the technological protection measures in order to reduce the incident that happened with regard to the infringement of copyright. Now, I've already spoken about the treaties that the president also indicated that we need to actually consult more on them. Of all these treaties, of all these five treaties, we are actually a member of the Bern Convention. We've been informed that Parliament has actually tried to approve that we also subscribe to the other bills, the YP Performances and Phonogram Treaty, the Beijing Treaty on Audiovisual Performances, the WIPO Copyright Treaty, the Marrakesh as well. So probably in future, all this, the remaining treaties will be acceded to, and we will then be able to, as we consult, as we reform the legislation, would also be benchmarking on them. But by far, the two bills has a number of provisions that were benchmarked with this particular treaties, but we are only now a member of the Bern Convention. Now, in terms of the amendments proposed in the copyright, the first one is not very important. It's really just some of the definitions that have been some removed, some added in the legislation, so I'm not going to talk about that. What's very important here is the second one dealing with, you know, to extend or to strengthen the scope of the copyright protection, which is actually contained under clause 2 of the bill. The bill also tries to deal with issues where, for example, the state or a certain copyright, the ownership thereof falls under a state or organization, international or local. So the provision would actually address, clause 3 address that as well. Under clause 4, it talks about communication to the public of literary or music, which actually allows the public to have access to you know, some of, for example, a musical work, whether that is done by wire or wireless. So those four addresses access to the public in terms of some of the musical work that is protected under the copyright legislation. The bill goes further to in broadly try to address the issue on royalties, because this has been a very important issue, which is really heavily contested. We have actually received a number of concerns, a number of inputs regarding the royalties. So the provisions try to deal more in terms of, you know, how the stakeholders are going to actually share in terms of the royalties. There's also clause 6, which actually deals with a distribution of an artistic work. We've already spoken about that, where that actually is actually made available to the public, also protected in terms of the copyright legislation. Clause 9 also talks about the sharing on royalties, also on artistic visual artistic work. Royalties is also extended to also deal with that. In terms of the resale royalty right, I've already indicated what it is, and that is actually included under clause 7 of the bill. In terms of the distribution, I think I've already spoken about the distribution for access to members of the public of the audiovisual work, whether you want to distribute that for commercial purposes or for rental or communication. So that is actually covered in terms of clause 8 of the bill. The sharing of audiovisual, I've already spoken about that under clause 9. And clause 10, same thing, distribution access of sound recording, which will be made available to the public. Also, that's subject to the copyright legislation. Now, the issue on royalties still extend for your sound recordings under clause 8, which also subscribe for the equal sharing between the owner, the collecting society, as well as between the owner and the performer. So your sound recordings in terms of the royalties, the extension of the protection is also extended in terms of this particular legislation. We've already spoken about the recording and reporting for royalty that is covered under clause 9. But what's very important is that what the Act does as it goes further is to also create some offenses. For example, it's going to be an offense when there are some of the actions that actually happen which are actually protected, which are not reported. For example, it's gonna be an offense for which is actually where a person will be liable for a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding 5 years or both such fine and imprisonment if it is actually found that, for example, the clause dealing with recording and reporting of royalty determination has not been complied with. So clause 11, amongst other things, also create an offense, the infringement, which is actually punishable in terms of the law. Now, I'm not going to talk about clause on neutral, gender-neutral drafting. Those are just the technical amendments that were introduced in the bill. For example, where reference is made of his or her, that has actually been changed, for example, from them to there. So I'm not going to address that. Clause 11, talking about, we've already spoken about that, making available by wire or wireless or communicating certain work for access to the members of the public. We've already, in summary, touched on that. Now, what has been introduced further in terms of this bill is issues on what we call the general exceptions. Let me put it this way. Where, for example, you don't have to comply, let me put it that way, with the provisions of the copyright. For example, the issue on fair use is really one of the key exception that has been introduced, where, for example, a person can actually use a certain work without really having to get permission, where some of the materials of the work can actually be extended, for example, to your people with disabilities without really having to get permission. That is really what Clause 15 tries to do, is to introduce a number of exceptions. We are, as we go through the presentations, we are actually going to be touching on some of the exceptions. Now, 12B also is an extension of what I've been talking about. So 12B as well, 12B 1, D, E, and H, same things, talks about some of the technical amendments introduced. It also talks about some of the provisions that were actually removed from the bill, so I'm not going to be addressing those now. I'm not going to address section 12C, talking about a technical process in terms of this bill, 12D as well. I am going to address the issue on what we call the freedom of panorama, which is one of the provisions or the exception that has been introduced. As you know, that in South Africa, the freedom of panorama is not available. For example, you are not allowed to take a picture, for example, of somewhere and then use it. So that is actually not allowed. Sharing of that, those, for example, information or photos, for example, on social media is not permitted. So the freedom of panorama seeks to provide an exception where you can actually use that. If it means you're taking, for example, a photo in a public space or of a certain building, you can actually use that without any restriction. You don't need to get any authority or any permission to use, for example, those particular photos. But as it stands now, that's not actually allowed. So the freedom of panorama is one of the few exceptions introduced in the copyright. Also, there are some of the exceptions on computer programs where it says if any person is actually having a right to use a computer program shall be entitled, for example, they can study, they can actually test, or they can do whatever on that particular program, as long as they actually do that within the confines of what the law will provide. As it stands now, some of the clauses or the sections would make sense as soon as the regulations have actually been done to ensure that the legislation can be understood or can be applied. I'm not going to address section clause 22. It's an extension of your exceptions that really covers, for example, your libraries where they can actually use information, your archives, museum, galleries, just like that. Information that is used, for example, for research purposes by educational institutions. So those are some of the provisions relating to the general exceptions that have been introduced under the copyright. Clause 22 addresses persons with disability, where, for example, all forms of disability would actually be able to also participate in terms of information, in terms of work that is subject to copyright as well. So, and this has been a policy position of the DTI. So that is why it's actually included in this. So there has been a number of some of the treaties that were actually consulted with, especially with regard to this particular provision. For example, the Marrakesh Treaty was one of those that really under which this provision formed the basis. So there has been substantial consultation to actually ensure that we actually bring some of these provisions in the bill. Now, the moral right actually happens where, for example, if you are an author, and you've got the right, for example, to raise concern if, for example, your work would be distorted or it could be modified, just like that. So you can actually object if you don't want to, and you've got the right as well to take actually to take legal action against anyone, for example, who may actually be infringing on your moral rights. We've already spoken, about some of the offences that will be created in terms of this particular bill. Now, clause 24 talks about the ownership of where, for example, a work has actually been commissioned. I'm not going to address that. It also, clause 25 talks about where, for example, a worker has been assigned. Look, as you go through some of these things, you would be able to actually make whatever additional comments or objections to what has actually been introduced in the bill. Clause 26 addresses the issues on licenses in terms of orphan work. Orphan work is actually defined as, for example, where copyright exists, but unfortunately the owner of that cannot be located. So clause 22 proposes that for example, if there is a resale of royalty, the right also accrues to within the orphan works. There's gonna be a strict regulation of the collecting societies that has been provided for in terms of clause 27. That's going to deal with accreditation, administration, and regulation of collecting society. So this is really one of the areas where the collecting society are raising concern not to be subject to the bill. The bill also introduces, we've already indicated, the copyright management information that addresses issues where there is a possibility of infringement of copyright, or where a person can actually tamper with information around management of copyright. Clause 29 deals with the technological protection measures we've already highlighted from the beginning, what this is one of the objectives of the bill. So there would also be penalties or punishment where a person has actually been found to have contravened any aspect relating to a technological protection measure. Section 27, like I said, talks about offenses as well as clause 29, where there is a possible infringement of copyright information. So these are some of the offenses that will be created in terms of the copyright amendment bill. Clause 31, prohibited conduct as well, that also relates to an infringement of a copyright protection measure. So these are some of the clauses that really supports the rationale behind the creation of some of the offences to against copyrights. Clause 31, I'm not going to address. Clause 31 is not really very important, though it also relates to some of the issues relating to technological protection measure. In terms of the agency that also implements the legislation, which is the Copyright Tribunal, so some of its functions would be strengthened, the procedure in terms of appointment of new members, how members will be removed or suspended. So there would also be other introductions of procedural matters on how the tribunal must actually conduct its matters. Clause 35 would actually deal with regulations. I've already indicated that a number of these sections would really make sense as soon as the regulations have actually been issued by the responsible minister, which is the minister of the DTIC. There's going to be a clause dealing with some of the contract terms, for example, that are enforceable. So that is clause 36 would actually address, in order to give further protection to copyright. So if it is actually find that a contract is not enforceable, that would also be addressed in terms of clause 36 of the bill. Clause 2 is not that important, as well as clause 38. That really is just an amendment in terms of the changing of expressions. For example, cinematograph, film, and film will then be replaced by audiovisual work and work, respectively. There's going to be some transitional provisions in the bill, and clause 40 addresses the short title of the bill as well as its commencement. So the conclusion in this regard is just to recommend that you note this presentation for further engagement with yourself, like we expecting additional comments from you as stakeholders. So that is the part relating to the copyright amendment bill. Like I said, there's going to be a similarity, a repetition of some of the provisions, for example, that are contained in the Performance Protection Bill as well. So, like we indicated in the copyright, this is basically to provide some more protection in terms of the economic rights that the performers enjoy, and also to deal with the restrictions on how the performances must actually be used, to also address issues on royalties and equitable remuneration within the industry, to also deal with some of the contractual terms that are contained in the bill, to also address issues on the copyright management information as well as the technological protection measures, and like the copyright to also provide for further offences and penalties if it is actually found that there has been an infringement in the bill. Clause 1 addresses your definitions. Not important. I'm not going to address that. And then clause 2 also talks about the key objective of the legislation, which is really to protect both the moral rights and economic rights of the performers. I'm not going to deal with the gender neutral drafting, because this is a technical amendment where, for example, there is a replacement of him or her to them or there. So that is not important. Clause 3 deals with, you know, the transfer of rights, and this is very, very important, especially when it comes to receipts as well as distribution of the royalties. The performance protection also addresses extensively the issues relating to royalties, where in this particular bill it's actually proposed that the excess of the transfer of right, for example, in respect of sound recordings, shall be for a period of about 25 years from the date on which an agreement has actually been entered into, before those rights can actually reverse back to the performer. So the period would be 25 years. But during that process, the issues on royalties should also still be addressed in terms of the legislation. Clause 3 addresses the protection in terms of the producers of sound recordings. We have already indicated or talked about this in the copyright. So the principle here really remains the same. Nothing has actually changed. So the protection in terms of the rights of producers on sound recordings would also be would also be addressed in the performance protection bill. Also, issues relating to restriction on the use of performance. So this one actually just provides the availability, for example, of the original and copies of the performance in audiovisual fixtures that need to go to the public. So this would also be restricted in a way in terms of the performance protection. That is actually clause 4. Clause 5 also addresses the copyright in audiovisual work. I'm not going to address the issues on gender neutral drafting, but what's very, very important here is to what extent, for example, some of the audiovisual works have to be used for teaching or for scientific researches. So some of these things would actually be protected or regulated in terms of the performance protection bill. The issues relating to the regulations, that will is a competency of the minister. So the minister would, amongst other things, deal with our regulations, for example, on contractual terms, or if some of the terms in terms of the contracts that the performers, for example, need to sign should actually be compulsory. That would actually be addressed in terms of clause 6 of the bill. We have already spoken about the protection in terms of the copyright management information as well as the technological protection measures. That is dealt with in terms of clause 7 as well as 8, and we've already indicated that offenses have actually been created where, for example, there's a possibility of contravention with some of the provisions that are included in the performance protection bill. This is just phonogram is and fixation expression is really the substitution. So they would actually, instead of using phonogram, the word sound recording, for example, will be used. So we will no longer be making any reference to phonogram. So instead, the word sound recording will be used. So transitional provisions also exist under Clause 10 of the bill, and Clause 11 deals with the short title and commencement. So this is just in summary. I know I've been very fast because of time, just to cover some of the key provisions, but these are the two bills that we are bringing forward to you. For further comments and engagement, further submissions with you. So that is just the end of my presentation. Thank you, and thank you, members.
Thank you, Mr. Mokaba. We really appreciate you taking the time to provide the presentation, firstly, and secondly, for trying to summarize it as best you can, given the immense detail that there is in this bill. So we'll now put it to all of our guests here today. Do you have any questions of clarity? And if you can raise your hand in rounds of three, we'll take questions in rounds of three. When I call on you, can you please say your name and where you come from or the organization that you represent? So I see there's a gentleman in the front here. If he can please receive the mic. Are there any other hands thereafter? And then the gentleman in the front, and then we'll see.
Hello. Okay. Yes, good afternoon. My name is Hilton Hartnick, and I'm from Surandam. I represent the local small enterprise organizations there. My question is, we are an indigenous community. I see section, or let's say chapter 10, transitional provisions, state there under point number 6. That there is some sort of provision being made for indigenous community to be protected somehow as an existence, probably, and then the indigenous cultural expressions of knowledge. How does this state that there will be protection from this moment forward when the bill is passed, seeing that currently, I mean, there is probably a lot that will come into effect when this probably gets passed, but how will this actually protect empower the indigenous communities who are already, extensively, I don't want to say the word robbed, it sounds, it's a little bit light, the word robbed is light, looted, everything is taken. How will this protect it? Would it be the heritage only? Would it be everything, business? Because then it means the whole province, I mean, it means the land and everything, because the land is part of the heritage. How will this protect them and empower them?
Thank you. Gentleman in the front.
Good afternoon. Zawukwazi utolika mhlekazi. All right. I'll try. My English is not very fluent, but if I struggle, I'll ask the gentleman there to interpret for me there. Firstly, let me start from the back and just indicate that our artists in all different categories, at some difficult times over the years, it doesn't matter under which regime, but I think this is the sector that has been extremely exploited for many years. And I'm happy that finally there's some amendments made to both this bills. And I want to commend national government and the province for bringing this to us today so that we just look at it. Because I think we need to find a way that our artists also, the work that they are doing is protected, and they can really economically benefit from what they are doing. And I think that's the first step I want to raise. Secondly, I just want on clause 12. On clause 12, we just want to, and I'm going to submit my submission in writing as well, just to add a 12E under section 12A, I see there's a 12A to D, but we just want to add a E there. And that E basically represents that, once this information is used at primary and secondary school for literacy work, that sector also at least is protected without license, I don't want to read what I've said, but I think that clause we submit, and we'd want the committee, so whoever must make that finality, to consider it and see whether it will really be prudent to include it into this one, because sometimes we when we protect something else, we disadvantage those who want to get into that industry and learn and that's for literacy purposes. I think I want to raise that one. The second one, I agree with the presenter that these two bills are intertwined because you can't enact the other one and not enact the other one. And I think we recognize that, and I think I'm happy that it is both been presented as basically one session. But I think for me, basically, the long and short of it, and I'm sure we've just raised some of the issues in our written submission, which I'll leave with the table here, with the chair, so that you also just submit it and consider it. But for me, basically, I'm quite comfortable, and I would even go further if that question has been responded to. What about us on this side of the world in our rural areas? You know, what are we included somewhere there? Are we protected? But I think for me, it's really about that our artist does not die as paupers. I think that's the basic one, and that's why I would support this and ensure that, you know, and ask that parties in parliament, whoever it is, that to support this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. So sorry, you didn't say your name and the organization, just for our own records.
I'm still Theo Winifier, and I'm from the community.
Oh, did I miss that? Okay, thank you, dear. All right, are there any other hands? Any other questions of clarity? See the gentleman over there, sir?
Yes, ek net klere tegen jy, dis David Marcus, I'm gonna represent the business sector for Swellendam community. As ek sê, I give thanks for the opportunity for this copyright amendment bill. It's like man net a commitment, die te sê is the access for the music industry and the policies respected, the royalty rights. Is it not like we there in our local town is, we have to organize now like an heritage festival. I do it already last year, but the time was just in 2 months' time, it was too short. And then we organize with the artists. We have to take time 6 months for organizing. So now we can an operation, we got opportunity to set up a business plan for an September month for like an yeah, festival feast for the town, Heritage Day of Heritage Festival. So the meaning is to go invited all registered organizations, schools, church to be part of this big event, you know. And so also work what Ayman suggested, Mr. Ayman, and so I want to organize still my live bands, reggae bands from Cape Town to that side. But they said then they have to get funding for them. That is the issue. Yes. They say for these bills is a great opportunity to can see for that tourism man we can organize maybe a registered reggae bands, the three main top bands to us town. But like Dan said to me last year, they wanted the poster too. Before them comes with that bill, they have to work through the municipalities, I will know. Yeah. So they said, well, this story, they say, for the royalty, it should be a blessing. Give thanks.
Thank you, sir. Are there any other questions of clarity? All right. To our last speaker, I'm so sorry, I didn't catch your name. Mr. David Marcus. Mr. Marcus.
David Marcus, yeah.
Thank you. I don't see anyone from the municipality with us today, but perhaps I can give you my contact, and then we can put you in contact with them for your own purposes of setting up an event.
True.
Okay, yes, great. I'll hand over to the department to address the other questions and perhaps just speak on the comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Shem. In terms of the first question that has been raised regarding the protection, for example, of indigenous work. The Copyright Amendment Bill, for example, like we indicated, provides just a broad general legal framework to deal with copyright issues. And the approach in this particular case would it's going to be a balanced approach. So if, for example, there's any work that actually flows from the indigenous community, that work also would actually be protected. That work would also be subject to the copyright, protection bill as well. So what happened is any issues, for example, relating to the payment of royalty between the creator of that work, for example, would still also be subject to the copyright. So they would not really be excluded in terms of the application of the legislation per se. Issues relating to, for example, the terms or the contractual terms that, for example, need to comply with, or when they enter into some kind of agreements, the same principle would apply. Though the one thing that I need to actually say is that even if that's the case, they would still be subject to some of the broader exceptions that we have already spoken about in the bill. We've already spoken, for example, about issues on fair use. If, for example, a person would actually want to use their work, the indigenous people's work, the fair use principle would actually allow the users to do that, because that's what it says. That's what the principle seeks to actually achieve, you know, to give permission to others without really getting authority from originators of the work. So the indigenous community would still be subject to this particular provision. So it's not like they would actually be excluded per se. So yeah, the act is broad, is going to address issues also relating to the work that's actually produced by your indigenous. But like I said, they would also still be subject to some of the general exceptions that we've already spoken about. The law is just a legal framework. So if there is, for example, a specific provision or a specific issue that the indigenous community would want the government or the department to actually address, I think we would be very pleased to look at what submission they're actually bringing forward, and then we can actually consider that the past as it stands, the act is going to be of broader application, so their work, for example, would also be included, it would also be protected in terms of the work itself. Also, we've spoken about the creation of if, for example, there has been infringement of their work, the act provide creation of an offense of and some of the penalties relating to the infringement, so they would also be covered in terms of the bill. Now the proposal, the suggestion that has been made in terms of the insertion of clause 12E, that is welcome. So I think the respective stakeholder would then submit that particular submission, and we can then look at it. We can actually address that. So yeah, if there's any other question, we are still at liberty to reply. Thank you. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mokabo. Are there any further questions of clarity? I see two gentlemen at the back, if the mic can go there. Thank you.
Molweni, Molweni, Kama Nguspiwo, under Israel K Youth Activist and the Spiro Art Foundation. So, mna bendifuna ukuxela kakhulu kwecala le theater practition. Xa siyijonga kakuhle i-theater practition yi-development esuka elokishini. So mna ka ndiyijonga u-CIPC akayondawo nokugxila kuyo kakhulu kwilantuza kwi-theater practition. So bendi meni nom saka inesmoina sokuba kungakalo akulu ku theatre practitioner according to the equal clause ne sessions koyo so that bana zigxile sihlale kubo kuba zaziwa kakhulu kaSamro yilanto uza ku music only, but then when you go to kaSamro uyoristarisha iscript sakho it's hard just because our registered as CIPC. You need to register as NPO or NGO and goes.
Good evening, everyone. The name is Sive Senembizo. I'm from Zodile. Okay. Because one of the reasons why I'm standing here was also to highlight the issues of theater and drama. We are a group of young people from Zulise who are more into theater and drama. We recently went to Dikas, to Baxter Theater, and we actually won the finals. I'm not sure whether I heard the speaker correctly or I was perhaps outside when he was speaking, but I didn't hear anything concerning theater and performing arts protection. I'm not sure whether I was outside. I would just like clarity in terms of does the bill actually cover your theater, your performing arts, and if so, in what sort of ways does it actually cover the theater and the performing arts people. Also, on the issue of copyrights, do the copyright bill actually also cover or to an extent the issue of your ideas, your intellectual property? Is it covered in the bill? Also, if you could engage with the statement that say. Right, bro. Okay. On the last statement, I might be quoting this statement out of context. I'm not sure. I'm still new in the house of public hearings and things. But I once heard that fair use is only something that is fair use only exists in America, or fair use is something that is relative to the American society. So if you can just engage with that statement and how fair use is actually relevant in the South African context. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Are there any further questions of clarity? I see none. I'll hand over to the department.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the issues raised by Zwelihle youth activists, activism group, right? The department is currently doing amendments, you know, to the Companies Act. If there are issues relating to, for example, the application or registration of, for example, movement like yours, and you would want to make proposal in terms of if it is going to be to be registered, for example, you want to be registered as a specific entity, you are actually at liberty to actually address that particular proposal, to us for consideration. We are in the process of amending the legislation, so you can make that proposal as well. You can actually make a submission. We are yet though to then publish those for product comments, but it's a matter that the department can actually look at and try to assist in that case.
there is a possibility. There was a question raised in terms of the performing arts. Yes, this is exactly what the performance protection seeks to actually do, to also deal with your performing artists. We've already spoken about, for example, some of the technological protection measures. So artists, for example, your theater falls within the ambit of this particular bill. So yes, you are actually protected in terms of the bill, unless if you want to actually point at a certain aspect within the theater industry itself, then it's something that we can actually address. You know, we can actually look at the specifics of that. But this is really the essence of the performance protection, is, for example, to deal with what's actually happening in the theater industry. A question was actually raised in terms of whether the bill, the copyright in this case, addresses addresses the ideas. We have already indicated as we begin with our presentation that the scope of the copyright is not to actually deal or protect your expressions or your ideas. You know, there's got to be something tangible that's actually being produced. So if you've got an idea, for example, because the legislation say this part or this work or that action or that recording, it must exist. So copyright must actually subsist in that. So if there is nothing, for example, that defined what we have actually, it's just only an idea. Unfortunately, in terms of the bill, the scope of the bill does not really cover an idea. An expression is not actually protected in terms of the copyright. This is what this is the scope of the legislation itself. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. If it is in order to everyone, and if there are no further... Oh, yes. Carry on.
Sorry. The fair use principle. Yes, indeed. When the department began to look and try to actually revise the copyright to look into some of the general exceptions, yes, fair use is one of the principles that was actually benchmarked. USA was one of the key countries where this particular principle was actually benchmarked. For example, your Canada as well is actually operating, your Australia, for example. So it's not like, you know, there is a lot of contention around the issues of fair use. You know, there are those who are saying, who are for fair use, and those, for example, who are saying not fair use. For example, your educational institutions do really support fair use because they know it's going to help the students in terms of them having to access information from the library. But then remember that there's going to be some restrictions regarding that, so that the principle itself is not abused. Your South African Democratic Teachers Unions are also supporting the fair use principles, because that would then allow principals, for example, to access information, to access copies. So the fair use principle, it's you know, according to you know, the information that we've received is very, very, very beneficial in terms of you know, balancing the equation in terms of access of information within a society. So yes, there are those who are saying it's bad. There are those who are saying it's good. So somewhere, I think, as government, as policymakers, we have to actually balance between these conflicting views, these conflicting interests. And remember that it was one of the exceptions that was actually raised by the president, who said you need to go further and then, you know, consult on fair use. So what we have now is just, you know, a summary of extensive consultation that we've made in bringing this within the legislative framework of the country. So I may not really have an answer to that that might satisfy you, but yes, indeed, to a very large extent, the fair use principle has been a principle that was actually benchmarked with the United States of America as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think that brings us to a natural transition into the next part of our program. The next part of our program will be the oral submissions. So the only oral submission that I've noted is from Mr. Anon Doyle. Would you like to just test your computer? I'm not sure if you've done that already. So Mr. Doyle is from Policy Analysis Regulatory Control at MultiChoice. Very warm welcome to you, Mr. Doyle.
Good evening, Chair, honoured members of the Provincial Legislature, ladies and gentlemen, all protocols observed. I'm Anon Doyle, Head of Policy Analysis and Research from MultiChoice South Africa. The presentation that I'll be doing this evening is, we've given a written submission. I actually sent it through this morning as well so that you could have that at the same time I'm doing my presentation. And this written submission is from both MNET as well as MultiChoice. MultiChoice and MNET welcome the opportunity to make submissions on the bills. We are major investors in and users of copyright, and the copyright framework is therefore of critical importance to us as a business, both in South Africa and abroad. And we support the updating of South Africa's copyright regime. Indeed, it is probably long overdue. The various treaties, as the gentleman from the DTI, mentioned, have been in place for almost a decade now. We also support the objectives of the two bills. However, we are very concerned because of specific drafting flaws in the bills that make it very unlikely that the laudable objectives, which are set out in the objects of both bills, will be met. Instead, it appears that damage would be likely caused to our industry. Very quickly, what is copyright? Because when one looks at the bill, it seems to be very unbalanced. What was a piece of legislation which was aimed at creating a legal right to protect the copyright owner or the creator of a work, a right which is a right granted by the state, and which it also enforces the protection of this right. Essentially, it gave the owner control over their work and how it's used. And the owners of the copyright can use, sell, or license that work to a third party. And the first owner of the copyright would usually be an author. And in most cases, the author is the person who created the work. It could be a composer of the music, an artist, a photographer. But there are some exceptions to this. An employer can also be the first owner of copyright in any work when it's made in the course of the author's employment under a contract of service. But that only applies if it falls under the contract. If he does something outside of the contract, it would not fall underneath it. And similarly, for which would be more of a freelance nature, for a commissioned work, the copyright may lay with the person who has commissioned the work unless there's an agreement in place to the contrary. To give a very quick example, that would be as if I decided I was going to build a residential property, and I commissioned or contracted a builder to build it for me. At the end of him having built the house, it would be mine. But that's not always the case. Perhaps it's not a residential property. Perhaps it is, in fact, a commercial property. and I agree with him to let space in that if he were to do some work at cost, and we would contract on that. So even though I may remain the owner, I could contract with him on how the ownership would be split up. The same generally applies where government is the employer or has provided state funds for the work. What is interesting in the amendment to the Copyright Bill, that de facto right that he who commissions owns is now being taken away, not for government, but only for the private sector. And that is a concern, and one of the proposals we've made is that we would like to see that right remain in the Act and not be removed or amended by the Bill. Now, I mentioned right at the beginning that copyright generally is a balance. It's a balance between those who create and between those who use. So what are the reasonable exceptions to copyright? Under UK copyright, which is very similar to South Africa, and that's probably because we were a former colony of Britain, and so there is some resemblance in our legal systems. It's based on the fair dealing regime, so it allows copies to lawfully be made for certain purposes. Unlike our legislation, it has been updated over the last few years, the last update being in 2014, which addressed the text and data mining for non-commercial research. And, of course, when the Marrakesh Treaty came out, they also made amendments to deal with making a copy for disabled people if no accessible version was commercially available. The key thing is it's a limited list, and most rights holders prefer it that way because it creates legal certainty. Those who invest in copyright also prefer it that way because, once again, if you're going to invest, you'd like to have some certainty that somebody's not going to copy your work and not make payment for it. But we also understand that there are people who are concerned that if there's a closed list and it's made only by the legislature, it takes some time, sometimes up to 5 years. This bill is an unusual case, which has gone for much longer than the normal 2 to 3 years that a bill would usually take. But even 3 years could be considered long in an industry which moves fairly rapidly due to technology. So one could keep a fair dealing closed list but give a power to make regulations subject to the three-step test in accordance with the Berne Convention. That is also preferable because it would provide legal certainty, and one of the key reasons why businesses don't prefer the fair use system, which is from the United States, as has been mentioned, is that it's a system which is prone to a high degree of litigation. I believe at one of the other hearings I said somebody mentioned it's been over 100 years in the United States, and it's something that South African can look at and use their case law. But the interesting thing is that despite it having been in place for many years in the United States, there has been no reduction in the number of cases. In fact, on average, the number of copyright infringement cases in the United States run from between 3,000 to 5,000 per annum. As I started off with, we have quite a substantial commitment, although we purchase international content to remain relevant. We also invest quite substantially into local content. We're proud to have developed over 20 proprietary local TV channels across 10 markets in Africa. We have a huge library spanning 69,000 hours. And in 2022 alone, we've invested over $7.3 billion in local general entertainment and sport content across Africa. At one of the other hearings, I also heard somebody making a presentation where we were actually lumped in with Netflix for some strange reason, because although we are international in the sense that we are across Africa, we are very much a homegrown company. Mnet started as a terrestrial broadcaster in South Africa, and DStv, which is one of our brands, was one of the first digital satellite TV platforms outside of the United States and also from South Africa. I mentioned local content, and one of the reasons that this has become a provincial matter and not just a national matter is because we invest, and a number of people create at a provincial level. And this is just a case study I put over. People are familiar with Survivor, South Africa. Our most recent one of that, which was done in the Eastern Cape, was developed in partnership with the Eastern Cape Development Corporation in terms of our focus. It boosted the local economy in the Eastern Cape by around about 18 million over the 40-day period it was shot there. Due to agreements between ourselves and the Eastern Cape Development Corporation, we also made donations both to the local community where the production took place and also to a local senior primary school. Over that period, 65 jobs were specifically created. 68% were youth-based and 28% were female. So this gives an idea of the provincial impact of local content. I think our biggest concern with the copyright bill, and probably one of its major flaws, is that it's taken a one-size-fits-all approach. The majority of the research, as could be seen by the presentation that we saw earlier from DTIC, a substantial amount of the work that went into the drafting came out of the review or the commission that focused very specifically on the music industry. Now, the value chain of television and film production is very different to music. We're not the same at all, just as the publishing industry is not the same as the audiovisual one. What we find is also, if I can give an example, the bill gives the minister very wide powers to prescribe compulsory and standard contractual terms to be included in agreements and to set royalty rates and tariffs. There's a constitutional problem with this because I think, as you're aware, you can't give unfettered powers to minister as the legislature. The Constitution tends to frown on that. So this might be something that could cause a further delay to the bill if it were to go through in the current format. But it's also impractical. You can't have one standard contract that would fit all audiovisual contract. If we look at it, we've got adverts, we've got educational, we've got big budget movies, we've got animation. And even when the type of content is the same, every production is unique, which is why every contract is drafted from the ground up. Because there's a difference in cost, there's a difference in investors, there's a difference in the funding model. Sometimes these are funded totally through the broadcaster, sometimes they are co-funded with the producer, sometimes they're co-funded with other broadcasters from somewhere else in the world, and then there are also occasions where provinces, through certain funds, may have also invested into it. So there's a tremendous difference in all contracts. They're all actually very unique. So standard contracts aren't really appropriate for the audiovisual sector. They would slow down the pace at which content could be produced, and also would be undermining the fact that parties should have the freedom to negotiate their own agreements. We have made fairly substantial suggestions, which have been submitted together with our written one, on how one could address this. Very shortly, one of the things we looked at is that if the problem is unfair contract terms, if you look at the consumer protection, is a very different approach that's taken to address unfair contract terms, and rather than giving these powers to the minister, you could rather empower the tribunal to address unfair contract terms and contracts. These are really, because we've got a very short time to present, these are kind of the minimum amendments that we think would be required. We don't think the Copyright Amendment Bill should go through in its current form. We think that the Performance Protection Amendment Bill, there's only a few core amendments that need to be made, and it could proceed with no problem at all, and thus it should actually be delinked. It should probably never have been linked directly to the Copyright Bill, because that's actually slowed down the Performance Protection Amendment Bill from proceeding. Whereas the Copyright Amendment Bill has some big flaws, as I said, the fair use, the fair dealing. Some of these need to be hammered out. But if this were to go through from a broadcaster perspective, the minimum we would like to see is we have some concerns around how royalties are addressed in the Copyright Amendment Bill vis-a-vis how they're addressed in the performers. I think it was mentioned that there are clauses that are duplicated in the performers as well as the copyright, but they're not duplicated exactly. And as you're aware, when there are two bills and they have similar provisions but there are differences, we end up with conflict and it's left to a court to decide which one is the one that will hold. Our suggestion is that it's better to leave performers' royalty provisions in the Performers Bill and remove them from the Copyright Bill. So that would be to amend Section 6A and delete Section 8A, because they are, after all, in the Performers Protection Amendment Bill. If they are to be kept, then one should rather keep to the same language as the Performers Protection Amendment Bill, which in line with the Beijing Treaty uses the term royalties and or equitable remuneration, because royalties is only one way in which one could be remunerated. There are other funding models which also benefit performers. We also would like to see the removal of the provision for the minister to prescribe compulsory contract terms. We're suggesting the deletion of Section 39 CG and Section 39 CL, and one could also see an amendment of unenforceable contract terms, Section 39B. There are similarities between these, and rather empower the tribunal to set aside unfair terms in contracts. One of our concerns as well is around the definition of broadcast in the current Copyright Act, as well as its duplication in the performers. The reason for that, our concern, is that at the current moment in South Africa, there's a debate about the term broadcasting and whether it's still relevant. And so in the current legislation that deals with broadcasting, mainly the Electronic Communications Act, which still uses the term broadcasting, may be amended at some point in the future to change to audiovisual content services. So rather than amend now and then have to amend later again, and also because the definition that's been proposed actually removes some protection. So we would prefer to see the current definition remain until such a time as there's an agreement between broadcasters and government on what the new term will be as we shift away from an era of broadcasting to one of audiovisual content delivery. We would also suggest that one of the other flaws in this Copyright Amendment Bill, and perhaps this is because it dates back almost a decade that it's been sitting in Parliament, is that it doesn't deal with some of the key current harms to copyright owners, namely that of internet piracy. There's no attempt in this bill to deal with file sharing. There's no attempt to deal with takedowns. If one looks at Kenya, for example, Kenya is one of the jurisdictions that's most recently updated their copyright legislation, and they have incorporated provisions specifically to deal around the harms that internet piracy brings in a digital era. And we have, if this bill does proceed, we have made some firm submissions on what could be incorporated as drafting to address internet piracy. I think one of our biggest concerns around the Performers Protection Amendment Bill is that there are fairly onerous reporting requirements that have been brought in. One is required to, and it's not quite clear, the language is not quite clear, but one could be that one has to, prior to broadcasting, register performances with the department. And then one has to also report performances to the performers. Now, when I say it's onerous, is that because if we look at multi-choice alone, I'm not even talking about the SABC or e-media, we have about 150 channels. In 1 month alone, we'd probably have around about 5 million performances. And I'm not looking then even at our other content delivery mechanisms such as Showmax. So we would have to send a report numbering over close to 5 million to the department. That's quite onerous. But what makes it even more not just onerous but irrational is that we don't have any direct relationship with the performer. Multi-Choice South Africa, which operates DSTV, acquires channels. Those channels we acquire have productions in them, yes, but we don't contract with the producers on those productions. The channel supply does. Mnet would have some relationship with producers because they commission productions, which then get built up into channels. But they don't have any direct relationship with performers either. So on a daily basis, over 150 channels, we would be expected to figure out who these performers are in the productions. And if we don't, there's a fairly draconian fine as well. In fact, the fine is a minimum of 10% of annual turnover. Now, that is a fine that's being imposed on people who have a legal relationship and to flight this content, which is almost nuclear in comparison to the fireworks on those who actually have just stolen it, if you look at the provisions dealing with infringement of content. It's also totally out of proportion to what's been done in other areas. If you look at the competition bill, it's a maximum of 10% rather than a minimum, and that's being applied against someone who's engaged in cartel activity. So it's totally out of proportion to what seems to be viewed as being a criminal offence rather than perhaps an inability to deal with an irrational requirement. We have proposed alternative drafting because we can see where the intention is. The intention is to determine what performance is happening, and we suggest it be done annually. Perhaps it be aimed more at the production sector who actually have the contractual relationship directly with the performer. We also think that a narrower definition of performer, more in line with that set out in Beijing, should be used. It's not clear in the current definition who is a performer. From our view, it should probably be your primary cast. But the definition now is so broad, it could also include if you have a street scene with three of your cast members talking to each other and you've got extras walking behind them, your extras could also be viewed to be performers, which would not be an industry norm. One of the other areas that we were concerned of was the limitation on the duration of assignment of copyright. It's been set at 25 years. Once again, this is not in line with international norms at all. The international norm is 50, and in some cases up to 70 years. But 50 is more or less the norm internationally. We're thankful for the opportunity to comment on the bills, and we reiterate our support for the objectives, and we emphasize our core recommendation that these two bills should be delinked. The Performers Protection Amendment Bill should not be held back because of the flaws in the Copyright Bill. We can also refer you to our practical drafting proposals. One of the things that I've noticed is that a lot of parties have been coming up and making presentations to the provincial legislatures, but they often do not give any drafting, and I think that's quite an important key element. It's not only what is wrong with the bill, but how can you correct it and how you can take the matter forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Doyle. We really do appreciate you taking the time to make this presentation to us. We'll now see if there are any further oral submissions that would like to be made. Okay. I see no further oral submissions. Ma'am, would you like a glass of water? Can we arrange some water for the lady in the front here, please? Okay, you're fine. Thank you. Sir, did you want to make an oral submission?
No. I just want to ask a question. I'm not quite sure if I understand it perfectly, but I asked a question and I haven't really received an answer regarding the question I have made, but I don't have a submission into something, you know, to be added on here, but I just have a question. I have a publishing company as well, and I own digital content, own a few million books and stuff and whatever in a library. So I publish some of the content as well. My question is, to what extent does one get protection in terms of private label rights, you know, products that you obviously have designed and then obviously we sell? But then in terms of me, such in my case, I own a business that has the products designed for it. My question is just, to what extent does one get intellectual protection as a business owner for the business? Because there are companies in South Africa that are basically stealing the stuff. So how does one, you know, get that looked at as well?
Thank you. So just a note, we have moved past the questions of clarity, so I will indulge you this one question, but we are going to move on from that to the conclusion. If I can hand over to the DTIC.
Thank you, Chair. We are able to actually assist the gentleman. It's a pity that the colleague from CIPC, who's actually a specialty in the area of creative industries, Mr. Betty is not here. However, we would want to, if you are able to actually make that request, and we'll then send it to the relevant office, who would be in contact with you to assist specifically with regard to a request. Thanks, Jen.
Thank you very much. I hope that helped. All right. So I just want to say thank you, Refuge, on the end.
Thank you, Zwelihle. Thank you, Steerbrak. And thank you, Swellenam. Thank you also to Mr. Doyle, to DTIC, to the members, to the procedural staff, to security, catering, IT, and everyone else who's just made today possible. We really do appreciate it. Just want to notify you in terms of the way forward. So we're going to take all of the inputs that we're receiving from these various public committees. This is our fourth one. Tomorrow night is our final one in Cape Town. We'll put it together in something called a matrices and then create a negotiating mandate which will go to the NCOP. So we're moving, and we just want to make sure that you're kept in the loop of that. And yes, I also just want to invite you to please help yourself to some of the tea, coffee, snacks in the background. And to those of you who have transport arranged, just make sure that you're downstairs by about 5:02 so that you don't miss your lift. Oh, and just a reminder about the headphones, if you could just leave them behind. Thank you, everybody.